You're listening to GNU World Order, Episode 4, Season 11. Hi everyone, this is Klaatu, and this is Episode 4 of Season 11 of the GNU World Order. Today we're going to talk about really, really cool technology that I gave a talk on at the All Things Open Conference 2016 in October. And now that that's done, I wanted to kind of reiterate what I said there here for you. It's called App Image. If you've not seen an app image yet, if you've not experienced app image yet, it's going to amaze you, you're going to love it. It is something that we need to talk about. We're also going to talk about Unix porn. It's not porn, it's Unix. And of course, I'll mention listener feedback. And let's get started. Open up with listener feedback, because that's sort of what we do here. There really hasn't been any listener feedback, but I figured I'd just kind of mention, just because, I mean, technically there has been listener feedback, so why did I say there wasn't? I guess what I meant to say was that there wasn't any listener feedback that demanded a response, really, but I wanted to mention that Doug, you remember Doug, he emailed me and said that he was excited to hear that I was doing Python stuff for as a paid gig now, and I possibly overstayed. So anyway, if you don't remember Doug is the guy who has been emailing me nonstop for like 5 seasons telling me to learn Python, really. But see, the thing I like about Doug is that he doesn't just email and say, hey, yeah, you should really get into Python. And I think this started because I mentioned I was doing Bash or something, and I was like, you know, what is Python really needed for? Like, Bash is great. And I don't see why I would need Python. And I knew that Python had a purpose, but I was saying for myself, you know, like, why would I personally need Python? And I think Doug kind of took that as a challenge and kind of, like, convinced me that actually Python was a good thing to know. That if I could be misremembering that. But that was, I mean, literally, you know, 4 or 5 seasons ago. So he kept on about it, you know, and he'd give me tips. He would send me sample files. I think there's some, if you dig around on the GNU World Order site, there are some scripts by Doug that are stuffed away in like show notes or something. So yeah, he's been on it for a while, and he's followed through, and that's what I was going to say. The thing I like about Doug is that, I mean, I don't know him personally. I mean, I just know him, you know, via email and stuff, I think. I don't think I've met him personally. But he doesn't just say, oh yeah, you should do that, or yeah, that would be a good thing to know, or whatever. He follows through. He says, you should get to know that, and hey, here's some code for you to look at, and that will help you. And that's really great, I've never liked it when people sort of give advice without, you know, actually making, you know, giving you the doorway toward whatever they're telling you to go toward. It's not always required, obviously. Sometimes you can just say, oh yeah, you shouldn't use, you know, that application, that'll bite you in the end. Or you should use that application because you'll love it. That's fine, but it's really cool when you can say, you should do that and let me show you something. Let me show you something cool, or let me show you how to do that, you know, whatever. So I really like that model of kind of, I guess evangelism, you could call it. I don't really love that term for much at all, but like you could call it sort of, I guess, enthusiasm. That's my preferred term. You know, it's kind of like, I'm really into this, and I'm not just going to tell you that, I'm going to show it to you. And that's what Doug has done. So thank you, Doug. But I should also mention that I've probably overstated. I'm not a Python programmer. Like, that's not, I don't go to work and sit down at a desk and program in Python. That's not what I do. I hack scripts, you know, sometimes for the company-wide Git server, Git repo, and sometimes just because I need it to do a job. So it's not like my job description does not say Python programmer, just to make sure that I'm not misrepresenting anything. So that was the listener feedback, and thank you for it, and let's move on. let's jump right in here to this app image thing. So app image, APPIMAGE, is a project by some guy on the internet called Pro Bono, I think. Although I think it's also sometimes Pro Bono DB. It kind of depends on where you encounter him. But he's a guy who, from what I can find out about him, I haven't looked that hard, but from what I gather, he worked on the Pure Darwin stuff, because I'm pretty sure one of his email addresses is at puredarwin.org. That's kind of my impression of his background, is that he comes from the Pure Darwin camp. Now, Pure Darwin, I was pretty excited about a long time ago, because, I mean, it is kind of cool to kind of almost call the bluff on Apple's dedication to open source, you know, kind of, you know, you're finally actually saying, okay, well, you've got all this open source stuff, we're going to put it together and make it run, but we're going to ignore all your closed source stuff. And that was kind of cool, you know. It was an idea, and I gather that it either didn't have enough momentum or that that Apple was being difficult. I would believe really both of those things. But sort of more or less from that idea, or from that camp, I should say, if I'm understanding the history of everything correctly, which I may not be, but from that world, I feel like I can say pretty confidently, came this idea and this realization that if macOS has anything, then it's got self-contained bundled applications that are bundled entirely within one directory, and you click on that directory, the OS sees it not as a directory but as an executable mini file system almost, and you click on that thing, and then you get to run you know, whatever, you get to run the application inside along with everything else. Yeah, like all the assets or the libraries or whatever's been bundled inside of that directory. And that's kind of what I think really everyone sort of took away from the experience of Pure Darwin, was that this thing existed, this self-bundling, or this self-contained bundled application model is a thing and is possible, and people really like it. Like, that's the thing. Like, people are quite, you know, they respect this application bundle because it's really easy to use. So, related to that, and because I don't want to make it sound like it's all the idea of Apple, because I don't know that it is. I don't know that it's not, but there were other influences. There was apparently a convention, a system in the Rocks Filer desktop, or I guess file manager, really, but it's kind of a whole desktop, isn't it? And it was this idea that you could have, I think they were called .appdir, and the app, appdir, and if you put things into this, you know, into a directory and then called that directory foo.appdir, then Rocks would see that directory as a bundle, you know, as a miniature file system that if you click on it, it would look in a specific place and see if it could run some specific executable. And again, I could be getting this a little bit wrong, because I'm not really, really up on the history and the influences, and I'm certainly not the creator of all of this technology, so I could be getting a little bit wrong, but this is stuff that I've gleaned from the App Image wiki and their GitHub and stuff like that. So anyway, there's this idea, right? There's this idea that you can run things completely self-contained. And the advantage to that idea, you know, the idea of saying, well, we're going to put all applications and everything it requires into one directory, and that directory is going to be the application. There's the obvious advantage is that it is portable. I mean, I think that's one of the main reasons people like the macOS model of these applications, is that they tend to be, and I'm going to say that very, I'm going to say that very specifically, they tend to be self-contained, because that's not always true. I mean, on the bigger applications, they do install very important assets somewhere else, outside of the actual executable bundle. So it's not necessarily always true that it's completely self-contained, but generally speaking, for the most part, it's self-contained. And people like that. People like that a lot. It's portable, they can just drag and drop it to install it, and you're done, and you launch it, and you're up and running. That's a very powerful way of doing things. They're self-contained, so that helps them be portable. But it being self-contained also means that you don't have to then go out and find other components that you need to in order to run the thing that you've just downloaded. And that's a huge deal. And I'm going to talk a little bit about why all of these things are huge deals, if you're not already aware, in a moment. But I want to underscore that that's a big deal, because I mean, one of the classic annoyances of Windows I'd always heard about growing up was missing DLL files, or DLL files, and I didn't really know what that meant, and I don't no, that's not true. I was going to say I don't think I've ever experienced it. Now I remember. There was a game that I was installing via Wine for an article that I was writing. I think it was like Doom or Quake or something like that. It was like one of those classic kind of games. And I was writing an article on how to use Wine for a magazine called Linux Identity, which I don't believe is around anymore, sadly. And so I'd gotten everything to install, but when I went to launch it, it kept saying that there was like this missing library or DLL or whatever. And the fix ended up just being like there was a DLL file, DLL, I don't know how to say that, in another directory that I guess the application wanted to find in the current in the same directory. So all I had to do, I just copied it. I was gonna move it, and I thought, well, maybe after the thing launches, it's gonna look in this other folder for it. So I just copied it, and then it launched, and it was fine. But that was just kind of a big fortunate, happy, yay! I experienced a missing, mythical DLL, and the DLL was right. I don't. I someone tell me how to say that. I honestly don't know. DLL. The DLL file was right in a directory, so it was really easy to fix. But imagine that it's not just happens to be on the same, it was just somehow misplaced by the publisher. Like, where would this DLL be? And that's kind of when you hear about desperate people going out online looking for these DLL files, and they'll just download anything because obviously they just need this stupid DLL file to play their game or to do whatever. And they will you could give them anything and they will install it at that point. So I mean that's what I've heard. So it's an important thing, and certainly on Linux you get similar problems, right? I mean you go to install GIMP, and as long as your repository is well managed and well organized and available, then it's easy. You just install GIMP. But what if you don't have the luxury of a network at that moment, or something like that? And that's kind of the biggest frustration, I think. Certainly when I was doing volunteer work at the local community center, I was installing things on about 9 or 10 computers, and I mean, ideally it was always just it was yeah, I had lots of advance notice. I knew exactly what they would need when they would need it. I could stop by at my leisure and install the things that are required, and that was that. But in real life, that's never how anything happens, right? The teacher of, whatever class that's coming up will call you at 4 o'clock and say, "Hey, I've got a 6 o'clock class today, and I forgot I needed, GIMP or whatever." And so you're thinking, "Okay, great. So I'll get off of work at 5, and then I'll go down to the community center and I'll install everything. Then that's fine." So you go there and then you realize, oh yeah, they don't have internet here. Now what am I going to do? So then you think, well, I do have GIMP on my computer, so I should be able to just grab GIMP off of my computer and put it onto these computers. And then you realize, of course, that it's never that simple. You're not just installing GIMP. You're installing like all of these other libraries. And even when you want to install just GIMP, it's not just GIMP.bin, you know, it's all the libraries. It's libgimp and it's libpng and libjpeg. There's not really a libgimp. GTK, you know, like all this other stuff. And you have to install all of that stuff as well. And that's really, really tough. It becomes a real problem, in some cases. In some cases, it doesn't. And in the best case scenario, you planned ahead, or you had time to think ahead, and you went home first, and you downloaded all of the packages that you would need, and all of the dependencies that you're going to need, and you'd put that on a thumb drive, and then you'd go to the destination, and you'd sneaker net all the dependencies, and you'd do it that way, and that's fine, and everything's okay. But as we all know, that's not exactly how life always works, so it does become a problem. So, I guess I just sort of talked about why it's important. But I think even more broadly, I just kind of want to point out that if we are Linux and open source enthusiasts, and we want people to use Linux, and we feel confident in Linux, and we want to be able to administer Linux in our daily lives, right? It's not, I don't have a personal need for someone to run Linux. I don't, I, it's like, it's not a moral thing. It's not something that I just can't stand it if you're not running Linux. That's not the thing that I want. It's really more when someone comes to me and says, "Hey, you're a computer guy, aren't you? Why don't you help me with this?" In that case, in those cases, I want to be helping on Linux. I want to be helping with Linux for many reasons. One, because that is at this point, that I can honestly and truly and confidently say that Linux is what I know best. That's just the truth. I mean, I grew up with Mac, and I will admit to knowing more than I probably feel like I need to know about Mac. But at the same time, there's also a bunch of stupid stuff in Mac that I can't be bothered to actually figure out, even though I'm a certifiable geek at this point. I mean, I wasn't a certifiable geek all my life. I came into computers pretty late, so for a lot of that time, I was just a user of Mac OS. I wasn't a power user, and then I became a power user. But that doesn't mean you actually understand stuff. And then at some point, I got really geeky and was running Mac OS as a Linux box, essentially. And so I really learned a lot. But there's that weird middle ground there of being a power user and actually being a power user who is embracing Mac OS. And I was never that, really. I was never happy with Mac OS once I started actually wanting to get into computers. So little things like, well, why exactly, if I delete this dot, what is it? Plib, not plib, plist. If I delete that, why doesn't my dock setting? Why do doesn't the dock settings reset? Or if I copy this plist from this one computer to the other one, why does that not load all of the correct icons into this place? Or, you know, whatever it is, weird, stupid stuff that I just couldn't be bothered to figure out. And never probably will be bothered to figure out because I just don't care and I don't need to know. So I want to know. I want to, you know, I'm very well versed on Linux. I know a lot more about a lot of the different aspects about Linux, much more than I ever knew about any other OS. So it's just a pragmatic thing. And then also, I don't want to spend my time on something that I don't own, essentially. I'm a very sort of selfish person that way, I guess. I'm not going to sit there and reverse engineer an OS that I don't use, and even if I did use, I don't really own. That's too much effort being put into someone else's problem. I don't work for Apple and I don't work for Microsoft. I'm not going to sit there and figure out how their systems work when a user should be able to just call them up and get the support from them, because it's certainly not my job to give support to people on systems that I'm not helping to build. So there's that. So I want people to be able to use Linux. I want people to be able to use it happily, and I want to be able to be the guy to support it. So in those cases, I'm essentially pushing Linux onto people, right? I'm saying, like, look, I will help you with your Linux, with your computer, as long as it's running Linux. And if it's not running Linux, go to your next computer friend. But if you want me to help, and if I'm the only one around who is going to help, then I guess that's what we're going to do. And so when you do that, you know, it's scary, because now you're the guy who told them to use Linux. And that's always fun. And sometimes it's not that situation. Sometimes someone wants to use Linux. They're like, nah, I want to use Linux. Put it on my computer. Let me add it. Let me go for it. And they're putting in the earnest effort. So, in either situation, why would we punish our own users by making it so darned hard to install software? Now, let me back up and say, in Linux's defense, that it's not hard to install software on Linux, given the right conditions. Like, as long as you've got access to your repository, and to be fair, the internet is everywhere, or at least I would have said that before moving to New Zealand, where actually there are places where the internet really isn't on all the time, or that just don't really have great bandwidth. But let's put that aside for a moment. Assuming we have access to some kind of software repository, and assuming that the software is in the software repository, then it's really easy to install software. You have to kind of kick the user a little bit, and tell them, stop going to the websites and just open the package manager and install the thing from there. Don't go to a website. You know, that's really hard to train people. And do you know why it's hard to train people about that? Because not everything is in the package manager. And that's the problem right there. That's really that's the root of this sort of issue, is that it's not possible for Linux to literally embody everything. Like, it will never happen. And I can speak authoritatively on that, because I've written software that is in use right now in local schools and is not packaged by Linux. So if someone was using Linux and I said, oh, remember, don't go to websites, just go to your package manager, then I would be lying, because my software has not been packaged for all of Linux. So right there, it's definitively, definitely not true that, you know, we cannot just say, well, users, all you need to do is stop going to the websites. It will be so easy. You can just type in yum and DNF install whatever, and it will just install. Because it's not going to be true. It's never going to be true. It's just not possible to make that true. And that's the nature of open source. People are programming open source things every day, and it should always be that there is more open source than Linux can possibly, from a central location, package up for everyone to use right away. So it's a good thing, but it's very difficult to tell users, well, here's how you install stuff on Linux, because there's not just one way, because sometimes they will have to go to the websites, they will have to download these things, and then they will have to install them, and on and on and on. And then other times there won't be a network, and they will say, well, you've got GIMP on your computer, why don't you hand it over to me? Just put it on a thumb drive, send it over to me. Can't do it that way. Can't get there from here. And you don't want that to ever happen. You know, like, you honestly don't want that to happen to your users, especially if you're telling them Linux is going to make your life so much better. I mean, if they're sitting there wanting to install GIMP and can't, and then they look over on the GIMP.org site and see that they could have just downloaded it for Mac as one package, or downloaded it for Windows for one executable, then that's not going to seem like Linux is going to make their life so much better. And the same goes for really, you know, anything. I mean, like, processing. It's a GUI Java subset It's a great little application, processing.org. You should check it out. It's great for people learning to program. It's a great method of making little graphical applications. It exports to self-contained executable Java applications, but also if you've got Android Studio installed, it will export to Android phone. So you can write an Android application with this thing, and it's super, super nice. It's really, really fun to play with. When you go there to download it, it's got a Linux package, not a big deal. It's Java, it's not a bad thing. So you go to download it, and when you download it, it downloads kind of a sort of a self-contained package, but it's not. I mean, you could just put it on your desktop and launch it from there, but more than likely you're going to have to install it, or you would want to install it to slash opt or slash local user local bin, whatever, wherever you put that kind of stuff. So there's no installer. You just drag that folder into a place, and then you would probably want to get that the dot desktop file, so that your system's kind of like aware that it exists, all of that stuff. And so again, there you go. Like, you've got yet another way of installing software on Linux, which to be fair takes a little bit of knowledge. Like, if you were just a normal Linux user and you weren't really aware of how all of it worked, you wouldn't know that you should drag that thing to some place, and that in order to get it into your application menu, you have to put a dot desktop file somewhere. You're just not going to know that stuff, And I think Synfig is actually the same way. Well, no, I think they actually have RPMs. I just use Synfig that way because I'm on Slackware and I don't want to be bothered. Yeah, so anyway, my point being, our users are, if our users are looking to succeed with Linux, then the last thing we want to do is throw a roadblock in their path. We want them to succeed. We want to make life easier for our users. So, again, app image, self-contained, portable applications for Linux. So how does this happen? Well, an app image is itself a .iso file. So it's a ISO 9660 spec file. So it believes it is an optical disc, really. But the cool thing is that you don't have to mount it and execute the thing inside of it. There's a little tiny little tiny C application that you do have to compile for different architectures. It's a C file that basically intercepts a click on the ISO, it auto mounts it, and then sort of does some redirection to some system calls, such that the application inside of the ISO is launched and knows where to find all of its libraries, and it's completely self-contained. And if you want to see an example of this, there are lots of examples. I would probably think the most famous example, I guess, in my mind, would be Krita, Krita. Krita. It's the drawing application that everyone loves. Like, everyone loves Krita. Everyone should love it. It's amazing. It used to be part of KOffice, and I guess technically still is. But it's getting a lot of attention out there. I mean, people are using it like in professional settings. Like, Krita is a big deal, and they are releasing their application as an app image. So you just go to krita.org and you download the thing and you launch it, and it just works. It's amazing. It is absolutely astonishing. And when I say it just works, I mean it usually just works. And I'll talk about that in a little bit here. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff, like a lot of other stuff. And you can find out more, or you can find more things using app image on the github.com/probonopd app image kit /wiki/app images. I mean, I'm talking Digicam, Digicam. I'm trying to look at and see what what other one you would really know? Oh, Popcorn Time. That's pretty popular. Open Toons. That's the Studio Ghibli open source animation application. Photo Flow, AVI Demux, KDevelop, Scribus, Stop Go. That's actually my application. Oh, cool. I didn't know that he had listed that. And possibly, most significantly, maybe, is Subsurface. Subsurface is, of course, Linus Torvalds' little application that he started and I guess doesn't maintain right now, but he started it, and it's a diving, scuba diving application. It's like to keep, a dive log. And that's not a big deal to most of us because a lot of us don't scuba dive. But the reason I guess Subsurface is a big deal, I guess, well, partly because it's Linus's, but mostly because it was a response. It was a call and response because Linus at the Debian conference back in 2014, I think, kind of like said straight out that Linux packaging was kind of a mess. And again, I mean, it's one of those that if you take it just as is, it sounds upsetting because it's not a mess, right? It's not a problem. It's so much not a problem that every other platform is copying it right now. I mean, you can't get a commercial OS right now, or a non-commercial OS right now, without, the concept of like an app store. I mean, it's just like that's what everyone is doing, and it all started on Linux. And that's a huge deal. I mean, it really is. That's a really, really big deal. But at the same time, it's a problem for the reasons that I've already described. So the fact that, it is a little bit of a mess in some ways, and there does need to be a solution or an alternative. And so Linus talked about it at this conference, and next thing you know, there's a solution, AppImage, and packaged up Subsurface, and that's how that application is distributed now. Okay, so there is a dark side to all of this stuff, and that is from a packaging standpoint, and that is, I mean, someone who is making packages for other people to download. I think that packagers, especially in the Linux world, we have this thing where we have a certain amount of pride in the fact that Linux packages are small. I've bragged many times before that again, just GIMP, for example. If you go to install GIMP on a normal Linux system, you're looking at about 11 megabytes. You're downloading 11 megabytes because GTK is already installed. Probably libpng and JPEG and all the other ones are probably installed. So you're doing like GIMP, whatever special GIMP libraries it ships with, maybe Geggle and maybe some docs. It's not a big deal. It's 11 megabytes, as opposed to the, for instance, Mac OS download, which is like literally 110 megabytes. It might be slightly smaller now, but I mean it's big because you're installing everything. You're installing the whole tool chain. And that's a big download. So app images pretty much have the same issue, where you're looking at exponential size increases. And that's kind of it hurts a little bit. I mean, it's not always going to be 11 megabytes versus 110. Sometimes it's going to be 17 instead of 3, which hurts less. Or it sounds like it hurts less, but either way, you are imposing redundancy, and certainly if you're doing it by the letter of the spec, then you really do install you include everything. I will admit that I don't actually do that necessarily. On the application that I package with AppImage, I don't install, for instance, I don't bundle, for instance, FFmpeg, because I just have too much FFmpeg pride, and I know that if I download an application, I want to make sure that I'm using my FFmpeg, not theirs, because my FFmpeg is amazing. Like, really, I compile pretty much everything stable into FFmpeg. I have, I think, 32 different dependencies of FFmpeg that I install, and that's just the codecs. That's not including the things in addition, you know, that they in turn might depend on. So my FFmpeg is quite, yeah, it's good. So I don't like to install, I don't like to force FFmpeg onto anybody. I want them to have their own FFmpeg, the one that suits their needs. So and maybe that's not smart, because eventually FFmpeg is going to change an important flag and then it's going to break. So I should probably change that policy and just bundle a very bare minimum FFmpeg. But yeah, either way, there's going to be redundancy, and that's just part of the deal. And you get the same thing on Mac OS, and that's one of my gripes about that model. You know, it's just like, well, I have already got libpng 14 on my system. Why are you sending me libpng 14 again? Like, that's stupid. That's not efficient. And sometimes you just have to make sacrifices. You gotta just swallow your pride and just be okay with redundancy and inefficiency, because it's gonna make somebody's life drastically easier. And that's what app image is all about. And one more thing about it, and that is that it's not just for us, it's not just for our users, it is for that Windows developer out there who sits down and says, well, it seems like this Linux thing is actually gaining traction finally, so I should probably start packaging my application for Linux. Might as well. I did it in this cross-platform toolkit. I've done everything like everyone's told me to do. I'm just going to package it up finally. And so they go out. They've never used Linux in their life, or maybe they've got a test instance just to make sure that their application runs, but they're not invested in the ecosystem of Linux like you and I are. So they go out and type in package something for Linux into the internet searches, and they get back results about how RPM is better than Deb, no, Deb is better than RPM. And then they look around a little bit further and they say, oh, well, maybe here's one that looks good, this Arch thing. That seems like they've got it together. Oh, wait, no, nobody uses that. Or a lot of people do, but it won't run on Ubuntu, I guess. So why is there an Arch package if I can't even run it on? Okay, so I'll just do Ubuntu because that's the one that I've heard of, so I'll just do that. And then there's, you know, how do you make a Debian package? Like, what's involved there? Oh, wait, you have to be a Debian packager in order to do that? Or can I just make my own? You know, and it's just, it's this big, confusing, kind of ugly mess that nobody wants to get near unless they live in it. And that's the kind of thing that we don't want to do as Linux developers and users. You know, we don't want people to approach us and say, hey, guys, I've got some stuff that you might find kind of cool. Where, you know, how should I get it to you? And none of us can really figure out how the best way for them to get that thing to us would be, because none of us can agree on the way that something is supposed to be done. We definitely don't want to do that. Okay, that is enough of the justification. It's kind of like, if you're not with me yet, then you and I probably just have different opinions, and that's okay, because I'm the first to admit that this is a big topic. You know, this idea of self-running applications, it's a big topic. I'm not saying there's only one right way to do it. In fact, what I'm saying is that there should be alternatives. So I don't want to throw out RPMs for app images. I just want to include app images into this world. Debians we can throw away. .deb files, we can throw that away. RPMs we can keep. Slackware packages and build scripts we can keep. App images we keep. Everything else can go. Okay, so let's make an app image. No, first let's have a cup of coffee. and then we'll make an app image together, and you'll see how easy it is. That was a great cup of coffee, and I'm saying that sincerely because I really did get a cup of coffee. As I always do. Okay, so the app image process. Well, actually, before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about Unix porn. It's not porn, it's Unix. So, some time ago, long time ago now, I had a website called unixporn.com, and I let that name expire. Because I didn't think anyone was really using it. And to be honest, no one was using it. So I let it expire. And so what unixporn.com was, don't go there right now. It's not mine anymore. I let it expire. What it was screenshots, Unix and Linux screenshots from different people. And I someone noticed that it was gone, and suddenly it was like everyone wanted Unix porn back. I don't know why. And I kind of let it go because I didn't, first of all, I didn't feel like people were using it, and second of all, the domain cost me money, which, that's not the worst thing in the world, but I'm just kind of, I've gotten this thing in my head now that I don't really want to pay for domain names anymore. First of all, I have too many domain names, and that's my fault. That was the correct answer, but I was like, well, I'm not gonna pay for domains anymore. I'm gonna get these free ones because there's free domain names out there. They're like the .tk extension, .ml, .gq, I think. There's a couple out there, and you can get them for free. The catch is you have to renew them every year manually, and if you forget, then they lapse, and you're out of luck. But I just that appealed to me, and so I thought, well, I'm just going to do that from now on. So I let unixporn.com go, and there was this Reddit group that had arisen, and originally when they popped up, they cited unixporn.com as not being affiliated with them because they were the new site around, using that term. Like they came up with that term and realized someone else had come up with that term already, and so they disavowed any knowledge of unixporn.com. And all of this is fine. I wasn't out to be the sole provider of Unix porn in the world. But yeah, people started noticing that unixporn.com wasn't around anymore, and I thought, well, all right, I'll redo it. So I reinstalled the little photo manager thing that I was using before. I got a free domain, unixporn.tk and unixporn.ml. And so unixporn.ml or .tk is back. It exists. It's a place where you can go and upload screenshots. Now, the killer feature of unixporn.tk is that my friend and yours, Sigflup from Hacker Public Radio, if you don't know Sigflup, go listen to everything that Sigflup has recorded for Hacker Public Radio. It's all brilliant. She's amazing. But she wrote this thing called Yes Please. I don't remember why it was called Yes Please, but oh, because there was a button on the front page of Unix Porn that, and it was like this pretend warning. It was like if you go past this page, you're going to see images that you'll never be able to forget. That kind of thing. And so there was this big button and it said, "Yes, please." So you clicked on that and then you saw Linux screenshots that were typically very tame. I mean, they were just Linux screenshots. So she wrote this application called Yes, Please, and it's a little C application that takes a screenshot. You type in "Yes, please," just like you would use like Scrot, for instance. It takes the screenshot and then it authenticates and uploads your screenshot to an album on this photo manager thing that I have installed on the site. So it's really actually quite cool, like honestly cool, and it's kind of it, like I say, it's kind of a killer feature. Like you're not gonna find that kind of that. Like, it's funny because when we had it, I thought it was cool, and now that I've recreated the site and I'm using Yes Please again, I'm just it's blowing me away. I mean, it's like really nice. You want a screenshot? Type in Yes Please. And if you have a config file, you don't even have to do any more than that, really. You just give it, I think you give it a title. And I think that's all that's required, because you can put all the other stuff in your config file. And it takes a screenshot, uploads it to unixporn.tk. Super, super cool. And kind of one of those things that I feel like we should probably, I don't know, make a bigger deal about that. But I really am not very good at making big deals about things. That said, if you want to go and take screenshots of your desktop and upload them to unixporn.tk, then go for it. Feel free. Just go to Sigflup's GitHub to get Yes Please. I'll try to remember to post it on UnixPorn itself. But you can grab the thing. If you're on Slackware, you can get it from slackbuilds.org and use it. Yeah, get an account first. You have to make an account because it has to authenticate you. But yeah, it's a cool little site. People are posting again, slowly but surely. So yeah, add yourself to Unix Porn and add some screenshots. And again, it's the name is a joke. It's Unix Porn because I used to tell people that I wasn't interested in. Well, it used to be this thing because everyone would say like, "Oh, the internet exists for porn," and people still say that. But it used to annoy me that people said that, and so I would say, "Well, here's what my porn is," and then I would go to Unix porn, and it was screenshots of Linux and Unix. So that's the name, the joke name. It's not supposed to be pornographic. It's not supposed to be bad. It's supposed to be geeky. So that's what that's all about. Now you know that it exists. Okay, so there are three steps to an app image. If you zoom out far enough, there are three steps, and those steps are let me get those steps for you. Those steps are: number one, get the RPMs, and I say get RPMs because that's the easy way to do it. Honestly, you don't want to do like I when I was relearning how to do this from scratch, I kept thinking that I would compile stuff manually, and that really makes things a lot more difficult than they need to be. So just grab pre-compiled RPMs. It's much easier if you do that for the thing that you want to package. The second thing is you compile yourself. You do compile the apprun.c. That's the little application that sits in the front of the ISO image that you're going to create, and it intercepts the clicks and the system calls so that your application can be truly self-contained. And then the third step is to patch any binaries and libraries that need patching, and we'll go through how to do that. It's not as hard as it sounds. So that's the, broadly speaking, those are the three steps in making an app image. You target what you want to create. You get your RPMs that support that thing. You get the apprun.c file, and then you patch the binaries and any libraries that need patching. Now, if you're doing all of this yourself, like if you've programmed something and you have to, and you're going to make it into an app image, that's fine too. You don't, you know, like, I mean, in that case, you're sort of building all of your own components, and you've probably got your environment pretty well set up for that, and that's fine. But if it's anything else, again, trust me, you don't want to have to compile stuff from scratch. It's just not worth it. You want to borrow from other people, and you can just take my word for it. Okay, so the zeroth step then would be to make a working directory. So make dir, the example that I did at All Things Open was AbbeyWord, AbbeyWord. It's a nice little lightweight word processor kind of an alternative to LibreOffice, right? And, you know, it's just, it's, but something bigger than gedit. So AbbeyWord's a good example, and if you want to try this, AbbeyWord is not, it's not the worst thing to try it with. So you make a directory, abbeyword.apdir, APPDIR. And it's customary to camel case the apdir, capital APP, capital DIR. And then you can CD into that directory. And from there you kind of start pulling down your RPMs. And, you know, I mean, the way that you do that would depend largely on you, on what commands you have available to you. Ideally, you'll be making an app image from a standard, you know, a fairly big distro from maybe a year or two ago. And you do kind of have to follow Linux well enough to know which distros make sense to target and which one, you know, where they are in their life cycles, that sort of thing. I would say, I would maybe acquiesce that probably an Ubuntu long-term support release would probably be okay. But I will say honestly that the one that I typically use is CentOS something, you know, CentOS 6, for instance. Because CentOS 7 just came out recently, or 7.2 just came out recently. 6, 6.5, that time frame, that seems pretty reasonable to me. The reason that we do that is because, well, first of all, we don't want to use something really, really new, because then probably most, you know, not all of our target is going to be using super, super new Linux. So you don't want to download, you know, Fedora 25, which came out today as I record this, probably a week ago by the time you hear it. You don't want to do that, because then everything's going to be super new and no one's going to have the libraries that you would count on them having. So we're kind of assuming that if we target a distro that's pretty generic and old enough, not too old, but old enough, that will kind of will hit everybody in general. And it sounds almost risky, but it actually works out really well. So there are commands, you know, there's like dnf dash dash download dash dash what is it, no install or something like that, or no, dash dash download dash only, something like that, and then the name of the RPM, and that just downloads that RPM and all of its dependencies. So there's different ways to grab these things. Or obviously, if you're familiar with a website, for instance, Fedora project, like their Yum repositories, their DNF repositories, whatever they're called now, then you can just go to the website and download the packages manually. It's all up to you. It's however you manage your packages. I did this pretty manually, to be honest, because when I was doing the presentation, I was doing everything on Slackware, and so I didn't actually have any automated sort of RPM downloading tool available to me. But you can certainly do it with automation. No, actually, you know what? I think I wrote the presentation on Magia, actually, and then I gave the presentation. It happened to be on Slackware. But anyway, I digress. So once you've got all your RPMs, and for AbbeyWord, you're looking at probably, let me take a look at how many exactly we had. The packages, not that many, to be honest. There were only about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about 7 packages. Actually, less than that, because one of them doesn't actually apply to this. So there's WV, libjpeg, libpng, libabbeyword, and then abbeyword. So that's 6, I think. So yeah, it's not a whole lot, because you're kind of assuming that the Linux distributions that you're targeting, you're assuming are kind of user-centric, kind of quote-unquote normal Linux distributions. In other words, your app image probably admittedly isn't going to work with TinyCore. It may not even work with something like SLTAS, But it's going to work with Ubuntu. It's going to work with Mint. It's going to work with Fedora. It's going to work with SUSE. It's going to work with Slackware. It's going to work with Arch. It's going to work with all of these things. And the farther away from that sort of centralized, kind of Ubuntu Fedora core, you kind of just start to assume, okay, you guys are using fringy kind of Linux, so you can figure out when you get the error about libpng 12 not being available, you'll be able to figure out that you need to go install that from your repository in order to make your thing go. So you're casting a wide net, but you're not trying to perform magic. Once you've got all your RPMs, you can unpack all of them with one command. And you can do this all within the apt-dir directory because they're going to unpack sort of into the correct place within that folder. And the way that you do that is you do a for pkg in asterisk rpm colon do rpm 2 cpio, that's rpm and then the number 2 cpio, that's all one string as a command, dollar sign pkg. And pipe that to cpio space dash idmv. And then semicolon done. So that just looks in your current directory. So we're assuming you're in the apt-dir directory. Looks in your current directory for any RPM. And any RPM that it finds, it assigns into the variable pkg. With that variable, it takes each variable one by one and it says, okay, I'm going to do an RPM to CPIO on that variable, the PKG, whatever's inside of there, which is an RPM, and it's going to pipe that to CPIO dash IDMV, which is sort of the, I mean, it's obviously the CPIO command, right? So we've just turned the RPM into a CPIO, then we send it over to CPIO to decompress it. Now, when you do that, it's essentially like untarring something where you get like all the directories kind of as they appeared when they got compressed. So if someone took a slash USR, or not a slash USR, like a USR and a lib and a share folder and stuffed it into an RPM or a tar or whatever, and then you uncompressed it, then you're going to end up with a USR, a lib, and a share folder in your current directory. Now, if you do that to all the RPMs in your current directory, they all auto-detect that there's already a USR directory. So they'll, if two things have libraries to put into lib, they'll just auto-detect that there's a lib directory in the current directory and dump their libs into there. So it's really quite nice. It's elegant, you might even argue. So you get with that one command, sort of a mini file system containing all of the major components required for that application to run in one directory. And we're again assuming that the stuff that RPM or DNF or whatever doesn't think to mention, we can assume that those are the things that everyone's going to have installed on their Linux system anyway. That's not always true, and I'll try to remember to mention some notes about that in a moment. But generally speaking, that's true. So if you go and you look and you say, okay, well, what's required for AbbeyWord? And it tells you, oh, you're going to need lib. WV for your word conversion, you're going to need libabbyword because we split it out for whatever reason. You're going to need abbyword itself, you're going to need, I don't know, whatever else, then that's what it needs. And it's not mentioning things like, oh, you're going to need libc, because obviously you're going to need libc. That's on every Linux system. Or if it's just, it doesn't mention that you're going to need libpng, because again, obviously you're going to need libpng. Okay. get the idea. Now you can confirm, sort of do a sanity check right now by doing an LDD on /usr/bin/abbyword. And that's not slash USR, that's dot slash USR, so the USR in your current directory, /bin/abbyword. And the LDD command probes a binary file, and it kind of sees what it's linking out to. And it'll tell you what it has found on your system and what it has not found. And in fact, you could even grep for like the word found, FOUND, or not in OT. And you should see all the stuff that it can't find right now. And one of them would be, for instance, libabbyword, or WV, or you know, whatever. In other words, it's the stuff that you've grabbed the RPM for, but that doesn't actually in maybe in it doesn't actually exist on your current system. But don't panic, that's normal. All that other stuff that is being found, that's the stuff that we're all assuming everyone's got on their Linux box anyway. Okay, so the next step, now that we've done that, is to sort of flesh out this apt-dir. So the apt-dir needs the USR and the bin and the lib and the share, or whatever else you've got. Like I don't. It's probably honestly just USR and maybe lib, but probably not even lib because that would all go into USR. So anyway, you can get rid of the RPMs. You can move those into some other folder outside of the apt-dir, just you know for safekeeping. But we don't need them in our apt-dir. But what we do need in our apt-dir, in addition to the USR folder, is an icon that our app image will use as an icon, and we need the desktop file. We're going to want that. And then, of course, we're also going to need that app run file that I kind of mentioned. So the first thing to do is to grab the icon, and that's usually somewhere in the package itself. And in AbbeyWord's case, at least in the RPM distributed by Fedora or wherever I got this stuff, it's called abbeyword_48.png, and it's located in the usr/share/icon folder. So you can copy that and dump it right into the base, the root level of your apt-dir, and just call it abbeyword.png, because that's what app image is going to look for. Is it's going to look for the name of itself, abbeyword dot you know PNG, I guess. Maybe you can do a JPEG or something, I'm not sure, or SVG, but I've always done PNG. And then you need the desktop file, and that, again, sort of puzzlingly, is in /usr/share/applications/fedora-abbeyword. I don't know why it's called that, but that's what they called it. But again, you just copy that from there and put it in your root level apt-dir directory there, as abbeyword.desktop. You don't need to call it fedora-abbeyword.desktop. And of course, if you didn't get it from the same place that I got it, it might be a little bit different. Doesn't really matter that much. As long as you've got the abbeyword.png and abbeyword.desktop in your root level, that's what you want. Okay, so the next thing that you'll need is the apprun.c file. And you have to download that, and the easiest way to really get all of this stuff that you're going to need is to clone the app image kit Git repo from GitHub. So if you do a search for app image kit, again, the guy's name is Pro Bono PD, clone that or download it, zip it, whatever, however you get your stuff from Git repositories. And in there's a file called apprun.c. It's right there on top. You almost can't miss it. So apprun.c, and then you compile that, and I think it tells you exactly how to compile it in the README file. But if I recall correctly, it's GCC dash O apprun, capital A and capital R. Apprun and then apprun.c, and it compiles it. It doesn't take but a moment. I mean, it's super super fast. And then place that apprun, the actual executable, not apprun.c, but the thing that you just built, apprun, right there at the base level of your apt-dir. So right now, what your apt-dir should look like is apprun, abbeyword.desktop, abbeyword.png, USR. Okay. Now here's where it gets a little bit weird, and this is the patching part. It's not hard, it's just a little bit difficult to wrap your mind around if you think about it too hard. So in a way, I kind of have to convince you now to just give in to the magic. So I'll just tell it to you, and I swear if you think about it too hard, it will fail. So don't do that. Just trust me on this one. What you want to do is you want to do a sed dash I space dash E space quote S underscore slash USR underscore dot slash underscore G close quote AbbeyWord dot app dir. Well, sorry, that's where you are. So dot slash USR slash bin slash asterisk. So you're patching the actual binary files that you've got in your USR bin folder, such that any time that they have a slash USR, you're changing that string to dot slash dot slash. I'll bet you didn't even know you could do that to binary files. I sure as heck didn't. And I know you think it's really weird that it's dot slash dot slash. You're thinking, no, what he means is dot dot slash dot dot slash. No, I mean what I said. Dot slash dot slash. Just trust me on this one. I know, it makes no sense. Okay, so then what you should do is cd into the USR folder and do a find dot space dash type f as in file space dash exec as in execute space sed dash I dash e quote s underscore slash USR underscore dot slash underscore g quote space curly brace backslash semicolon. So you're finding all files in USR, in that's where you are right now. So you're finding all of the files and you're looking through those files, and anything that says that contains the string slash USR, you are again changing to dot slash. I know what you're thinking. If you're anything like me, your brain is insisting that I'm wrong and that it's a dot slash. But I really want you to believe me that it's just a dot slash. So, okay? Just do that. Okay, so once you've gotten that done, then you can create the image. And for that, you can cd back into your apt-dir, so cd dot dot, and then you can run the packaging script that came with that, the Git repository that you cloned. So wherever that is, let's say you keep it in your bin folder. So it would be tilde slash bin slash appimagekit.clone, or whatever you called it, slash appimageassistant.appdir slash package, and then the name of your appdir, which is abbeyword.appdir. And then the target would be abbeyword.appimage. So run that, and that will take a little while because it's going to look at your appdir and make sure everything checks out okay. And roll all of that into an ISO, so you'll see a little, ISO burn thing go through. And however long it takes, it could take like 3 minutes. You'll end up with this file called abbeyword.appimage. Now, if you look at that file in your file manager, then you'll see that it looks like an executable file, whatever that looks like. Oh, actually, it might not. I don't know what it'll look like at first, but yeah, if you so you should chmod plus x that. So you can, or you can do that in your file manager. Right click, go to properties, is executable, make that true. And then it should look like an executable, whatever that looks like. Technically speaking, it should be rendering itself using your abbeyword.png, but it obviously kind of depends on your file manager, so don't count on that. But that is technically what should be happening. I think maybe that doesn't happen until after you've clicked on it. I don't remember, but either way, click on that executable file. and it should launch Abbey Word. If it doesn't launch Abbey Word, that's okay, don't panic. Try executing it from your terminal, so /abbeyword.appimage. That should read, exactly the same as a click, but with the benefit of getting error messages. And I'll tell you right now what one of the error messages very well may be, and it'll be about like libjpg or libpng or something like that. I think it was libpng. It might have been JPEG. One of those two. There's like I think it was PNG because it was. I think everyone right now is shipping with libpng 14, and everyone's perfectly happy with that. But Abbey Word is just sticking with libpng 12. It loves libpng 12, and it's not going to move on from libpng 12. And there's a couple of applications that do that. Synfig did that to me just the other day. So there's this package that I've seen almost everywhere now called Legacy libpng 12. So apparently it's a very popular iteration of PNG. So you install that. Now, of course, you wouldn't want to install that. As the packager, you would want to make sure that you stop what you're doing, get rid of your app image, not your app dir, just the product that you've just created. Get rid of that. Download the RPM for legacy-libpng 12. Roll that, do the RPM unpack command so that it unpacks itself to user lib, and then remake your re-roll the app image with the app image kit dot git or dot clone, whatever you called it, slash app image assistant dot apter slash package abbey word dot apter abbey word dot app image. Wait for it to repackage itself and then launch it again, and that time it should launch. And again, that should all happen without you actually having libpng on your system. I mean, that's the or libpng 12 on your system. That's the idea. That's the goal. And I'm leaving this error in so that you know to expect it. Like the danger is always that you have assumed that your users are going to have something that you just, you're just sure everyone's going to have it, because I mean you checked it on Fedora, it was there. You checked it on SUSE and it was there. You checked it on Slackware and it was there. I'm not You don't have to check it on Ubuntu. Obviously Ubuntu's going to have it, everyone else does. And then sure enough, the minute you give it to an Ubuntu user, it doesn't work. You have to check like your targets, and you do just kind of have to make sure that when you know that you've packaged everything that your users are going to need. And you kind of have to step outside of the Linux packager mentality and just kind of go with the idea that you're going to be redundant. You're going to possibly package up more than what you believe should be necessary. And that's a payoff. It's a payoff. Among a lot of things, one of the most important ones is user satisfaction. You want your users to be able to click on that icon and have it just work? Then put it in the package, seriously. If you're okay with saying, hey, you're a Linux user, you have to install libpng 12, and we're just gonna assume, we're gonna lay or ffmpeg in my case, I mean, then that's fine, but just know that you are now taking a beautiful thing like app image and making it a geeky thing that people have to think about. And I was less convinced of this before my talk, but during my talk, a guy, Marcus Hanwell, was saying that he does a lot of stuff, self-contained packaging stuff for support at his work, and they do crazy things, like they package Python into their applications. Like they take the Python that they were developing with and they put it into the application bundle because it has to work. It has to work today, it has to work in a year, it has to work from 3 years from now. And the way to ensure that that's gonna be the way that it works is that you've got the versions of the things that you were using packaged up with your application. And that's another great argument for app image, to be honest. Just legacy support, like future-proofing everything. You want this thing to work, then you need to you need to take all of the assets, and that includes those libraries and those interpreted language and all that other stuff, and you need to put it into the bundle that you are then sending out to your users. And again, to kind of Linux developers and packagers and users who are really, really entrenched in the Linux way of doing things, that sounds just absolutely crazy. But it is not. And if Apple can do it, and if movie studios can do it, and all those other places can do it, then you can do it. You just have to believe. So anyway, at this point, you technically ought to have an Abbey Word app image, and that's really it. And I know that kind of took a while, but at the same time, you heard the steps, and I'll do it really quickly. You make your app dir, you unpack you grab all your RPMs and unpack them into your app dir. You copy an icon and a desktop file and the app run executable into your app dir. You do a sed to replace all slash usr with a dot slash in your executables, and you do a sed to replace slash usr with a dot slash in your libraries. And then you make the app image. That's it. Those are the steps. So even sort of unpacked into kind of like the gory details, you're still only talking about like five or six steps. And the beautiful thing about it is that it can all be scripted, and it should be scripted. That should be part of your process. You can do one app image for free where you're not scripting it, because you want to see that it works, you want to be convinced, that's fine. But after that, there should be no more question about it. When you do an app image, script it. Script it well so that you can download something or you can trigger a new build and walk away, get your cup of coffee, come back, and you're done. You've got your app image. And honestly, app images, they're great, like I say, for developers. They're great for users, and they're great for I guess sysadmins would be the role that I'm thinking of. The person who has to maintain a bunch of computers. And if you're not on a fancy setup with like Ansible or Puppet or whatever, where you can just try to type, install this thing on all of my computers, then app image is the way to go, because you show up in the classroom with or without a network, with or without 20 minutes to do the work in, and you just you could take a thumb drive and pass it around to the students and just have them drag and drop it off the thumb drive onto their desktop, and it's installed. It installs itself for you, essentially. Now, there's a lot of other features on App Image that I've not even touched on yet, and there are so many great ones. There's a thing where App Image will launch, and if it doesn't detect that the desktop file is available on the system, it will offer to install a desktop file to that user's local account. You probably didn't even know this, but there is a local mirror of user share applications in each user folder. So if you go to tilde slash dot local slash share slash applications or something like that, then you might not, because you might not have anything installed, but there can be dot desktop files there that will show up in your application window menu that won't show up in other people's application menu. So when you launch an app image, it will look in your user folder and see that there is no abbeyword.desktop, and it will say, hey, or it can, if you turn this option on, it can say, hey, you don't have this in your application menu, would you like me to add it there? And the user can say, why, yes, I do. And it will install itself into their user folder, and that way it integrates itself. They haven't even all they did was drag and drop the thing onto their hard drive, and now it's integrated. It's in their application menu. Super, super nice. There are ways to have it up, enable kind of like update alerts. Like, hey, there's a new version of this application. Would you like to go and download it now? It is really, really slick. And once again, just I want to emphasize and reiterate, because I don't think I've really said it yet, there is no dependency on the system to run an app image. Like, as long as your system can run ELF binaries and mount an ISO, you're good to go. An app image will work. This isn't like other systems that require kind of a compatibility layer or anything like that. This is just pure self-contained. Very, very cool stuff. Now, I should probably even mention here, now that I've kind of gone into that territory, that when I started this presentation for All Things Open, which was in October 2016, when I started doing that, so I think I had about 9 month lead time, because I had pitched the thing, and I believe I had about 9 months to do the presentation. So when I pitched it to All Things Open, the only thing that was available was App Image. That was, you wanted a self-contained Linux thing, it's App Image. And I think it was fairly new-ish. I mean, not super new, but I mean, it was pretty fresh, because there weren't that many listed on the GitHub site. It was like Krita, PTV, I think, and Subsurface, and maybe a couple of others, but that was about it. And now they've got a whole, page, a couple of pages of projects officially using App Image as their distribution method. About midway through my presentation prep, there came about these other projects. One was Snap, or Snappy, Snap, whatever, from Ubuntu, and the other one was Flatpak from GNOME. And they were basically doing the same thing, self-contained, sort of portable application images that you could install and sort of run anywhere. Now, I've not used either of those, but there are a couple of things to keep in mind about them. And one is that they do require compatibility layers, which, if the compatibility layers are open source and start to propagate, I think that's not a big deal. Because, I mean, as I said, everything's going to require libc as well, or, whatever. So, I mean, it's not that big of a deal, but it is something to keep in mind. They do require application layer compatibility layers, and ideally and hopefully they will go everywhere. Like, we'll all have them in our Linuxes, just sort of as a as an afterthought. We won't even think about it. They'll just be there. But if that doesn't happen, then that's going to be a problem. And App Image was around and ready to go well before either of these other solutions. Which I'm not saying, oh, App Image is better because of that. I'm saying App Image is, in my mind, better because they don't require the compatibility layer. But I think there's other things there, right? Like, I saw an Ubuntu Snap demo by Popey, and it was a little video that he was doing, and it was a nice. Like, it was a couple of clicks and he'd made a snap package. Now, he didn't demonstrate necessarily what you could then do with that snap package. Like, he didn't put it on a thumb drive and take it to a Fedora box and launch that application. In my presentation, I built the app image and passed a thumb drive around to people, and we had one Ubuntu user and one Fedora user, and then I was on Slackware, and AbbeyWord, I'll be darned if it didn't launch on all three platforms. I mean, it was pure magic. It was one of those things that just shouldn't happen in a live demo, and it worked like exactly as I would have hoped. So that was really, really cool. And I have yet to see anything else really kind of achieve that level of brilliance, really. So App Image is something you're going to want to look into. It is really amazing. It's worth looking into. You should absolutely, absolutely try it out. And if you just want to at least experience, sort of, if you want to see it work, go to App Image, the GitHub App Image Kit. Go to upstream App Images, and just download something. Download Digicam or download OpenShot or whatever. And try it out, see what happens, because it should kind of just work, and that's really, really satisfying. So there you go. That's App Image. That's how to make them. It's why they're important. It's why they're great. I strongly encourage them. And I hope you enjoy them. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. Talk to you next time. Okay, I think that's it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening, as always. My name is Klaatu. You can find me online at GNUWorldOrder.info or at SlackerMedia.info. You can find me via email at Klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation, .org. And you can also find me on LinuxQuestions.org as NotKlaatu. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.
Haunted the tomb each night.